What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
True crime fans will love Crime House True Crime Stories, a Crime House original podcast. Every Monday, you'll experience the most notorious true crime cases from that week in history, all linked by a common theme, from serial killers to disappearances to unsolved murders and so much more. Follow and listen to Crime House True Crime Stories, an Odyssey podcast in partnership with Crime House Studios, available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, don't look now, but you can feel it. You can hear it. The crack of the bat. The smell of hot dogs and peanuts and baseball with the Royals is coming back. You know you're ready for it. I mean, it's only a matter of time until we get Bobby Baseball. You get, you know, everything in the world that you've ever wanted.
And the pitch. And a swing and a high fly ball.
There's a spring sound.
Deep left center field. Way back there, and that ball is gone.
Love it.
He got a lot of it. The wind didn't hurt either. Onto the grass berm, and a Bobby Witt Jr. souvenir as the Royals are on the board. They're now 2-1.
Ah, Steve and the old spring. I'm sorry. What was that?
Oh. Wow, that sound of the bat, baby.
I mean...
Liner to the gap in left center. That is trouble, and it is gone.
Man, that's just Bobby Witt Jr. home run sounds.
That ball is crushed.
Can't outwait. Royals are getting ready to start their season again.
They're better sounding sports than the crack of the bat.
The swish of the net.
Swish of the net's close.
And the sound of a ball rolling into a hole on a golf course. A little punch.
That's kind of a good sound. I think baseball has the best sounds. The pop of the glove, the crack of the bat, the cleats walking on the concrete, and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Like baseball is the best sounding sport, I guess you could say, you know, for me anyway.
No, well, I agree.
When one of the first things you say about your sport is, oh, the crack of the bat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you don't really describe the NFL. Oh, the crack of that first big tackle. You're like, yeah, shoulder pads sound great.
Do you ever notice that, though, in a game, like in an NFL game, the sound of the guys colliding?
Yeah. You're like, every time Isaiah Pacheco gets the ball, you know, whatever that is. That's my SFX for football.
It's fantastic.
But Royals expectations as they move on from last year to this year, whereas last year we were saying, you know what I mean? Just get us to July.
Get us to May.
Be competitive. And I mean, they slam dunk that times 10. And I think opening day here in Kansas City, when they have it, after they start the season on the road, then come into Kansas City, I think will be a great crowd. I think you'll see a lot
more. They start here this year, don't they?
I couldn't remember. Because I feel like they've started here like the last like 4 years, which is awesome.
I think with teams, like, you have certain days that you say we want games at home, and you kind of go through that. And I think the Royals for a very long time have like almost demanded they be at home to start the season, because we know what happens if you start 0-5 on the road. The interest on opening day has not been great, right? And so I can only remember, I want to say, maybe twice since I've been doing this that the Royals have opened on the road. It's only been one time that they've opened on the road, because, you know, you want your fans to see you when you're 0-0 versus coming back and not being very good, because the excitement would be gone. And as Ben said, we judge our baseball team by opening day and then regroup at the All-Star game. Right.
Right.
It's like,
March 27th, Guardians and Royals opening day.
What an opener.
Yeah. So then obviously they don't play the Friday the 28th, and the 29th they'll play the Guardians again at 3:00. And then again on Sunday, they'll play again as well. And that'll be at 110 in Kansas City. So first three games of the season, rather shoot against the evil empire, the Cleveland Guardians.
Yeah, that's a hell of a way to start the season too, right?
So Royals expectations for the season. They are plus 3,000 to win the World Series as of today.
Where does that rank be with other teams?
Lower half.
Lower half, okay.
Yeah,
okay.
I mean, obviously the Dodgers, Yankees are at your top at like plus like 600, 550, whatever it may be, or whatever they had them at. I didn't really look at them. I just looked at the Royals. To win the AL or to win the AL in general, just to win the American League, plus 1,300.
Mm-hmm.
To win the AL Central, they have the second best odds. They have plus 270 to win the Central. The Henry Lake Minnesota Twins sit at the top at plus 210.
So,
Cleveland also is at plus 270.
Okay, plus, I was going to say, where's Cleveland? Where do they have Detroit on that list?
They have their fourth best odds, and then or the third best, or fourth, and then the White Sox have the last.
Yeah. I'm surprised with Detroit. I think Detroit's going to be pretty good this year. Obviously, based on the way that they finished this. I think it's Detroit and Kansas City this year battling for the division. That's just my
time. I'm sorry. Second.
Yeah, sorry. Detroit's tied with Kansas City. The Guardians are 300, plus 300. So this is funny. DraftKings, Twins, plus 210. Royals, plus 270. Detroit, plus 270. Cleveland, plus 300. Chicago White Sox plus 2,500 to win the AL Central.
Well, I don't think anybody's betting the White Sox to win the division this year, right?
Right.
But I don't think they're going to lose 120, you know, like they did last season, right? I mean, like, that's hard to do to be that bad. So I don't think they're going to lose that game. But I think Detroit and Kansas City are the ones that are going to battle for the division this year. And you know, the Indians just don't do it for me right now. I don't know why, but I just feel like Detroit on the come, right? Like, how good were they towards the end of the season?
Oh, my.
I mean, the way that they picked up steam. Yeah. They went down to Houston. They played great baseball down there and won some games in the postseason. So did the Royals. Like, I'm feeling really good about the Royals and Detroit right now. Cleveland maybe third. Minnesota, was last year a down year for the Twins? They didn't make the playoffs, because if it was, then they're supposed to be back up this year, because that's kind of the way they go.
Fallout at the end of the season.
I mean, that last month of the season, I mean, the Royals didn't play great down the stretch, but the Twins played even worse to allow the Royals to get into the playoffs. Thank goodness for that.
13 other teams ahead of the Royals in the World Series odds. Your favorites are the Dodgers at plus 300, the Braves at plus 750, the Yankees at plus 800, and the Phillies at plus 1,200. Notable teams above the Royals: the Padres, the Twins, the Mariners, the Rangers, the Diamondbacks, the Orioles, and the Red Sox, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
To make the playoffs, the Royals sit at plus 110.
That's not great money. You know, not a great return, because they expect you to be in the playoffs this year. And that's my expectation, guys, for this organization. Winning the division, getting into the playoffs. I think that has to be your expectation this year for them. Like, you take the next step the next year, right?
And right.
Last year was the wild card. This year, take that next step. Win the division.
FanDuel gives you at plus 140 if you like that juice better, Bob.
And somebody asked a question on the text line: why do the Royals always play one home game to start the season and then have the next day off and then play again the rest of the... So here's why.
Weather.
That is the number one case, is if there is a rain out or a freeze out, they have Friday to fall onto, so that way they have the extra safe day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why that happens. That's just why
I think
the Friday's
it sucks.
Off.
You get that excitement.
It
it's awful, right?
It is terrible.
You get excitement of opening day, and then you stop down and the weekend happens,
right.
And then it's like Monday and you're like, oh yeah, that's right, baseball's back. Like, it's such a buzzkill. It really is. It's
right.
Such a buzzkill to have that off day.
Yeah, it's like, to me, it's kind of the same equivalent. It's not at the same level, but it's like the Chiefs every year when they win the Super Bowl, they play Thursday night. Then it's like, well, now we're going to wait Friday and Saturday for the NFL to return.
Yeah, right.
Now they give us the game on Friday in a different country, which, whatever. But still, it is kind of like that when it would be like a Thursday night football game. It's like, yeah, college is on Saturday, but come on. Like, it's not the NFL. We got to wait, you know, 2 days until we get back into the swing of things.
And then wait 10 games for the next Chiefs game.
Right.
We don't have that problem this year.
Yeah, so benefits of a loss.
Right.
Over under 83.5 wins is the number for the Royals. That is at minus 110 to take the over.
Yeah, I think you should take the over.
I mean,
that's
two games.
Right?
That's basically three games above 500.
Yeah.
81 and 81.
Right.
If you think they're going to win the division and you're sold on that, or you think they're going to be a playoff team, you would hammer the over.
Yeah, but it's such negative money, though. That's what stinks about that one, right?
Bobby Witt Jr. is the second favorite odds to win the MVP at plus 450. Judge is number one at plus 300.
Is there anything we can do to get the Bobby Witt MVP talk going now, so we don't have it to wait till midseason when New York wakes up and realizes that Bobby Witt's good, but Aaron Judge is having a better season, so they're always going to vote for Aaron Judge? Like, we need to get that buzz going somehow, some way, for Bobby to be the favorite all year long to win that MVP, because he should be the MVP this year. If he does what he did last year, hell yeah.
This time last year, would Bobby even be in the top 10 of the odds?
Probably not.
Probably not, right? Yeah. So the fact that he's, what, 50, 100 points less than Judge, second, firm second place, that's already a big head start. That's good.
Yeah.
So the talk's already happening.
Okay.
One good game against a good team, the Guardians, in that opening series, you know?
Like, if he goes an opening day, goes 4-for-4 four with a home run, boom, and makes a great play at shortstop for the final out or something 100%. Like that, are we talking, like, put your money on Bobby Witt for MVP.
And then Judge will hit a home run in Yankee Stadium and go back up to the favorite.
Thanks, Dusty.
Sorry. I got burned last year, man. Not one freaking first place vote for Bobby Witt Jr. I'm still sour about it. Manager Q has plus 1300 for manager of the year odds.
See, I just don't think he's eligible. He was on a good team last year. He should have won it last year.
The guy that won it last year was on a good team, and it was Cleveland.
Yeah, he was a rookie manager last year, too.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. Q's in year three. I think we're going to have, like, the Andy Reid comparisons
But
now.
If you think they win the division, he would win, I believe, manager of the year.
He should, right? But I'm sure there's going to be some team that has a new manager that goes 81-81, and everybody throws flowers and goes, oh. Or the White Sox don't, you know, embarrass themselves. They only lose 110, and whoever manages that team gets managed. Right. Like, that's how it's going to work, I feel like. But by plus 1,300, those are good odds.
And that's then solid. One that I kind of like, but Bob will hate, is at plus 7,000, my guy, Jack Caglione, for rookie of the year.
I don't hate that at plus 7,000. Hell
plus no. 7,000 is right.
Throw now. 10 bucks on that.
Yes. Now, I can hear Alex Gold in his car driving to work saying, yeah, but he's got to play a certain amount of games. Paul Skeens didn't, but Paul Skeens was the most dominating player in baseball last year in the second half. Like, yeah, you just couldn't touch him. So it was an outlier of an award for him to win it. But let's say Caglione comes up in mid-June, right? Somebody gets hurt. Two guys get hurt. You have no other option. Renfro's out. Melendez is out. Got to bring the kid up. He's banging it out in AAA. Comes up here and hits like 12 to 15 home runs and has like a 265 average. That dude's going to win Rookie of the Year.
Who was Rookie of the Year last year in the American League?
Good question.
Thank you.
Oh, it was Paul Skeens.
No, National League.
Oh, National League. American League. I don't know.
Bueller.
Luis Gil.
Oh, the pitcher for the Yankees.
Oh,
Yankees.
That's right. Yep. Luis Gil.
It's Gil.
Gil. So there's my point, right? We didn't know, and then you didn't know how to pronounce his name. Like, who is that? We three gentlemen who work in sports had no idea which is great, because I guarantee you 90% of the people driving around had no idea who the rookie of the year was. And then you name the guy, we're like, who? You know, sorry, just like, Gil. Oh, that guy pitched for the Yankees? Yeah. Like, seriously, that was your rookie of the year last year.
Yeah, he was good in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, he was good. Yeah, but it's not a playoff award, I was told, right?
Somebody says if Jack comes up here early, does that mean the Royals are probably bad again? No, I'm saying if it's due to injury, like he would come up if there's like two injuries to the outfield, then you have no other choice.
And there will be, because that's the circle of life in baseball, right? Oh, I stubbed my toe. Coming up 17 months, you're out.
Coming up on the other side, we say goodbye to our Chiefs beat writer of The Athletic, Nate Taylor, as we say goodbye to him through the football season and close that chapter of what was the season for the Kansas City Chiefs. Nate Taylor on the other side here on Fesco and Dusty with Mac as well on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
Fesco and Dusty.
913-586-7965. Call in right now and tell me how much I suck.
On Kansas City's FM sports station, 96.5 The Fan.
Nate Taylor in about 4 to 5 minutes here for the last time for the football season. We'll put a bow on that football package with Nate Taylor of The Athletic here in a little bit. Before we get into that, Nate, I know you're listening, so I got to give you some fuel before you come on the show, because Fesco is really interested to know how you feel about these comments by Rob Parker that I know you, Nate Taylor, have heard. But here they are again for the minute and 33 seconds of hell.
Andy Weid should step down as head coach.
Andy Weid.
And you're going to be like, they just went to the Super Bowl three times. Andy Weid, blah, 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 blah. This is not a one-game reaction because they lost in the Super Bowl and they got boat raced and it was 40-6. Where were the adjustments? Where was the game plan? I'm not a football coach. Mm-hmm. Guys who are football coaches and question the game plan. No running game to start at all. And then you get behind, you got to pass. This is what he did in Philadelphia all the time. Pass happy. Always throwing the ball. They got tired of that in Philadelphia. Number two, this fall off the cliff is 2 years in the making. Last year, they won the Super Bowl, so it kind of covered up how bad things were. You remember with the receivers and the struggles and Patrick Mahomes. Here's another year. Andy Reid is supposed to be an offensive genius. Why is Patrick Mahomes struggling so much when you can't figure out a way to get him off and to get him to be not 50 touchdowns and throwing every ball downfield, but way better? Can you admit that Patrick Mahomes hasn't been the same quarterback the last 2 years? Andy Reid is supposed to be that guy, and yet we haven't seen it. It's been a nice run. The last 2 years have been disappointing. Regular seasons. Yes, they went to the Super Bowl. Yes, both those times. And yeah, I'm not talking about the last 2 years.
I mean,
and this year, they got embarrassed.
Just like you did right there with that take, pal. Like that is, I keep saying, one of the worst takes I've ever heard. It's not one of. That is the worst take I've ever heard. He goes, this isn't a reaction to one game. So you're telling me if the Chiefs would have won on Sunday in the Super Bowl, you would have been demanding Andy Reid retire? All right, is that what you're saying, Ron? Where are the adjustments? Did you know the game plan going in, Ron? Did you know what the game plan was, Ron Parker?
We're just going to call him Ron.
Well, whatever his Rob. Name is. I mean, when you have a take that bad, your name's irrelevant. He said they're falling off a cliff, and then he mentioned the last 2 years of the regular season that they were 15-1 this year in the regular season
and
with their starters,
and
11-6 the prior year. They went to back-to-back Super Bowls, won two of those three, and these are the takes that Ron is rolling out there. He almost sounded like a guy who is doing a podcast by himself, trying to get noticed and trying to climb the ladder. And Skip Bayless would even be insulted by that. And I know everybody uses Skip Bayless. Oh, you're just a Skip Bayless hot take machine. No, Skip Bayless is very good. Even Skip Bayless would be embarrassed by that. Mad Dog, he would look at Ron Parker's take and go, I don't understand what you're saying. Andy Reid is one of the best of all time. He's in his 60s, and I love 60-year-olds.
And Andy Reid should step.
It's Andy Reid.
Andy Reid.
Yeah. Listen.
Yeah. Oh, I just had that Andy Reid. Yeah. I'm ready for the challenge of what's coming next.
Good at
yeah. Taylor. I mean, my goodness gracious.
He's the only man in history to win a race in a hot dog costume and break the news that Chris Jones is back with the Chiefs.
I'll get on that, coach.
Yeah. All right.
Here's Nate Taylor from The Athletic.
That's right. We do this one more time, and then it's time for Nate Taylor to disappear into the abyss. And this is presented by Mark Ferguson. We all make mistakes. Let Mark and his legal team make the best of them. Nate, you didn't get any coffee spilled on you at the Super Bowl because of my co-host who spilled his entire cup of coffee all over Matt Derrick.
No. Thankfully, I got out of there just in time. But was definitely part of the cleanup crew. So, I don't know. Maybe that was a bad omen. Who knows?
That was the foreshadowing of the Super Bowl.
If that was the beginning, I mean, it was very, very
good. It was
good.
So great, too, because he was like, Matt, you look great. You've come a long way. I'm hearing about your story. You do good work. Here's a hot cup of coffee all over your laptop.
I know. I felt so bad. And Matt Derrick, because he's so nice, is like, oh, it's no big deal. Had it been like two guys to your right, I would have got my head chewed off probably, yeah. Right?
Maybe. I don't know. But it was definitely... You know, we had just listened to Lift Every Voice and Sing, which sounded, you know, which was great. And then, you know, all of a sudden, it's an experience I'll never forget, Bob.
Yeah. Well, I'm glad I could give you something memorable from that game.
And then
Nate.
He doubled down and went and got that large boat of nuts.
That was a serving size. Yeah, it was perfect.
And spilt it all over Matt Derrick again.
I had a bad day.
They not like us, Nate. They just, you know, he just all over.
Yeah. I mean, I could have told you that should have been a foreshadow of what was to come for that day. What did you think of that guy, Ron Parker of Fox Sports, with maybe the dumbest take in the history of takes and in sports radio to say this is the dumbest take you've ever heard? That tells you how dumb it was.
Yeah, it's something that, I've known Rob for years, and I don't know. I mean, your theory might be right in terms of just trying to get some level of attention and traction, but this is not the way to do it, kids. Andy Reid is obviously going to be back next season. He should not retire based on one game. It's unfortunate that, you know, you have your worst game of the season in on the biggest stage, but no. I mean, if that's the case, you can extend it to everybody on the team, honestly. It's something that I'd even try to wrap my mind around, which is just like, there, it's not just one position group. It's not one person. It's not one coach. It's not one player. Just about everybody takes the blame in terms of the offensive side of the football. And, you know, these are human beings on defense, and they can only do so much. That's a very good team. That's a worthy champion. Mm-hmm. And it was a, you know, I know everybody's going to say it was similar to, you know, the Tampa Bay loss. And I understand that. But, man, that unraveled at a much faster rate than I remember being in Tampa Bay when, you know, Patrick and the team had opportunities or had more opportunities to sort of get back in the game. This was from start to finish and an absolute beatdown.
Yeah. Nate, I want to bring this up because I don't know if you've done this yet, but I know how well prepared you guys can be as writers to where, like, I feel like the Travis Kelce retirement article is half written. And maybe more of it is getting written day by day because we've all heard his comments of New Heights and the podcast. We talked to Clark Hunt during Radio Row session. He believed Kelce's coming back. Man, I hear those comments and it sounds a lot like I'm really, really, really thinking about one thing more than the other. And that one thing that I'm really thinking about is hanging him up.
Yeah, it's really sad, but this is the reality that he's now in, because when you lose a Super Bowl, kind of like the way they lost, and I want to be very clear, guys, if you think Patrick Mahomes was bad, do not watch the All-22 film of Travis Kelce. It's I have no idea why he was that bad, but he was awful. And when you lose in that fashion, and now you realize, man, my body's going to be another year older. Like, my body's going to have so much maintenance around it. Like, I'm hurting physically, emotionally. I know people have said it. I agree. He sounds very exhausted. And so the Chiefs are going to give him essentially a month. You know, they would like to know sometime by March 14th, 15th. You know, that's kind of like the deadline. I don't know if he wants to go out in particularly on that note, but I understand when your body, you know, he's gotten to the point now in his career where you may do everything right, training wise, practice wise, getting the right amount of treatment, mentally being clear. And if your body just doesn't respond, what are you supposed to do? And he's reached this point now where it's like, man, he was so good in that divisional round game that I said, wow, they've somehow masterfully done it again, where they've managed him through the course of the regular season. Can they ask him to do that again? Does he want to go through that again? And I know the thing that jumped out to me, fellas, is him acknowledging, which is true, this is a fact, he and Patrick have played more football than anybody else in the league when it comes to skill position and the burden of carrying an offense, obviously, two back-to-back championships and a third straight Super Bowl. So when even he's referencing, my God, I played a lot of football, how much do I have left? All you are to do is to say, okay, I got to dust off this copyright. I got to, like, you know, add some more records, add some more notes. He's had an illustrious career. He's a first ballot Hall of Famer, yada, yada, yada. But the Chiefs kind of desperately need him to come back one more season. That was the plan when he signed the new contract last offseason, was like, hey, you know, we're guaranteed to get one more probably great year out of you. Can we get one more good year in 2025? And if that doesn't happen, then that makes this offseason even more complicated for Andy Reid and Brett Veach.
Yeah, and Nate Taylor, I think it's going to be a wild offseason. I think there's going to be a lot of roster overhaul. I think we may see a Tyreek Hill type of trade, you know, where you trade somebody that nobody really expected from a fan base perspective to see moved on from. I think this is going to be a very, very active offseason with a lot of roster overhaul. What do you think?
Yeah, a third of the team is gone.
Yeah, right.
Pretty much. Is my understanding. A third of the team is just about gone.
And that's kind of, you know, like the life cycle in the NFL, though. A 30-year team goes every year, you know?
Right. And now it's a question of, does it get to 40%? Does it get to like 45%? You know, they're going to value their draft picks this year because they don't have that many. I think they have, what, six?
Yeah.
So they're going to value their draft picks. There's going to be some level of, hey, can you add on to more resources? You know, how much is Clark Hunt willing to write a check? You know, that's the first major question I have is, all right, man, we all know how Patrick's contract is set up. You know, you cut him a check, you create more cap space. It's just a matter of how much of that check you want to write to him, you know, to get as much cap flexibility as you can this year while also trying to mitigate some of what you're going to do in 2026. I want to remind people that this is like a two-year thing now. This team tried to push as much of the chips all in as it could without sacrificing 2025 and 2026. Well, you came up short in the Super Bowl. So you did all you could in 2025. They need to get a lot more younger and dynamic on offense without necessarily sacrificing the defense's integrity. But, yeah, it'll be fascinating to see, like, what happens to Nick Bolton, what happens to not only Trey Smith, who I think has probably played his last down as a Kansas City Chief, but what do you do with the left tackle situation? And that, again, doesn't even include, hey, by the way, like, one of the greatest players in franchise history may have also just played his last game, too.
So bringing up, if you're going to make some moves and to get something, you've got to give something. Are we sure that guys like Chris Jones didn't play their last game in Kansas City, or a guy like Trent McDuffie may not have played his last game in Kansas City?
Okay, now we're getting into some waters that I'm not sure I have all the information on. Here, let me tell you, everybody, they need to sign Trent McDuffie as fast as possible. Mm-hmm. I don't think you can trade Trent McDuffie. That would be I think that would be unnecessary. Now you have to tell me what the trade conversation is and yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. But like he's your best young player on the roster, period. Like he's a back to back all pro. Chris Jones, I wouldn't do it personally.
Him as hard as I could this offseason.
He's really good though. He's still really good, and he's more of the son to the. And I wrote this over the, you know, during the course of the season. Chris Jones is the son, and everything revolves around him on the Chiefs defense. And that includes Steve Spagnuolo, who schemes everything, obviously, around Chris Jones. I have no idea who's generating pass rush if you just take Chris Jones out of the lineup, you know, consistently. Again, I wouldn't do it. I know the contract is, what, 5 years? It's really like 3 years, based on my understanding of when it got signed. I wouldn't do it. I think the easiest path for the Chiefs to stay, you know, a contender in the Super Bowl towards next season is to keep as much of your defense as you can. You have Jaden Hicks for Justin Reed. If you sign Trent McDuffie, maybe you let Nick Bolton walk in free agency. You can obviously draft another linebacker if you choose to go that way, or get somebody relatively cheaper in free agency, a la Drew Tranquil. It's the offense that's probably going to take more time because there are no good solutions at left tackle. Now, if you say, well, look, why don't we trade Chris Jones for a bona fide left tackle? Well, now that's tricky, kids. It's really tricky. But the Chiefs defense can be consistent next year and close to what they were this past season. It might take the offense time, especially in regards to Kelce and how Rashee Rice comes back from his own injury, how quickly the offense can get back to elite level. The offense was functional because Patrick was, again, amazing, and he had Travis Kelce and a very good coaching staff, and they didn't play anybody nearly as good as the Eagles on defense. But, yeah, I wouldn't trade either one of them. I would sign McDuffie to a long-term extension now that he is eligible. And it's nice to have George Karloff this, but it's even better to have him and Chris Jones because those two are still very, very good players.
So how do you suppose they take that next step? Because we know the Tyreek Hill trade opened things up, got you those draft picks, and you were able to get Trent McDuffie and do all that kind of stuff that you wanted to do to make your team better when you traded Tyreek Hill. Do you see a player like that we could potentially do? Like maybe Rashee Rice. And I'm just throwing out a name that has value where you could get something back. Or you're not going to get something by trading Mike Dana, or you're not going to get something by trading – Justin Watson. You always have to give something up. Is there somebody right. like that we could see a Tyreek Hill type of trade?
The only trade that would – I think the only trade that would make sizable difference, and I won't say equal, but similar to the Tyreek Hill trade is Chris Jones.
Yeah.
Chris Jones is still 30. He's still very dominant. You know, you can get multiple draft picks for Chris Jones of value. I don't think there's anybody else on this roster who can necessarily generate that level of interest.
Mm-hmm.
Again, Rashee Rice is coming off an injury. And by the way, he's like perfect for your offense.
Yeah.
That was one of the things that was so, you know, devastating to the organization when he got hurt, was because they were trying to make him the legitimate number one receiver. So again, that Travis Kelce didn't have to take on more of the production burden in terms of the workload. Kids, it comes to, like, they have to draft well. There's no way around it. And by the way, you're drafting at 32,
right?
Outside of your one top pick, that's a third rounder that you got from the L'Jarius Sneed trade. Now you could say, hey, could you do another L'Jarius Sneed trade? Could you try to hedge it to some degree where you say, hey, if we don't trade Chris Jones, if we don't get, you know, the compensation we want, and we don't get the draft picks we want, could we do a L'Jarius Sneed trade? Well, then I guess you could think about McDuffie or George Karlaftis. I wouldn't. Those are homegrown players. Mm-hmm. They fit your system perfectly. All they know is the Super Bowl, by the way. So I wouldn't necessarily do it. But I know the Patriots made a career, a decade, of trading people earlier than people thought to keep this thing, you know, as dominant as possible to create a two-decade window for Tom Brady. I don't know if the Chiefs are willing to do that just yet. But I do understand that every draft pick they have this upcoming April is extremely valuable. And you could argue perhaps more valuable than last year's draft, because Kingsley Suamata didn't work out, and all of a sudden you're in the same predicament you were in 2021.
Nate, it's been a pleasure this season, man. We appreciate it. I know the end of the season was heartbreaking to you, and you follow the team more than just like the fans that sit there and watch you write about it. I know that ending wasn't the way you wanted it to go, but we look forward to many more years of doing these interviews with you on the radio. We appreciate the long time that these seasons are. Enjoy it, my man. Go take a long break. Put the typewriter down or the keyboard down. Just shut the laptop for the month. The hell with it's Friday. I know you got the draft coming up and football never sleeps.
This is the work time for Nate.
Find some time, man. Find some time.
I mean, you talk about Travis playing in all these games. How many more games have you had to cover and you didn't get January off, right?
Right, exactly. Yeah, I've done this job for almost 8 years now, fellas. I have never taken the January off.
Good. So let's keep that going.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, it's nice to include February as well. So thank you guys for obviously having me on. Hopefully can inform everybody, keep everybody, you know, up to date on things. But yeah, I mean, it'll be a fun off season because, again, just get it through your head. 30% of the team is gone.
Right.
And hopefully I'll be there to update you along the way.
Oh, you will be, Nate. We appreciate it. Take care and do your thing, man. We appreciate you.
All right. Thank you, guys.
That is Nate Taylor, The Athletic, presented by Mark Ferguson. We all make mistakes. Let Mark and his legal team make the best of them for you. Coming up, college basketball has exactly what it needs to be relevant. It's just not the superhero. It's the villain. We'll explain on the other side here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your home for Kansas City sports. 96.5 The Fan.
Back here on Fesco and Dusty with Mac as well on 96.5 The Fan. Cold and Drew today from 10 to 2. They'll have you for those 4 hours. And then the drive from 2 to 6.
I don't know if Carrington's coming in. I read a tweet this morning from him that he was sick.
He got the bug?
I don't know. Something going around.
Well, they said he was coughing yesterday. Tom Coughlin. Been watching a lot of college basketball the last couple nights because I tend to enjoy it this time of year. Now the football season is over. Baseball, we're pining for the first bat to be cracked in spring training. And I don't really get into hockey. Maybe I should.
Such a great sport. So much fun. Have you ever been to an NHL game in person?
No.
All right. Once you go, you'll be in love with
that. The Blades were gone before I could go.
Yeah, but that's not NHL. NHL. Have you, Mac, been to
a real?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And?
Went to a lot of press. Oh, they're so much fun. Aren't they the best? They're amazing.
Yeah. It's the best sporting event live.
I think it might be.
It's tremendous. Like on TV, it's like, whatever. You go to a hockey game live. I mean, it is.
You feel it.
Yeah.
You
really do.
You're in.
It's a great sport. And I would always encourage people who say, I don't like something, obviously, to try it before you don't like it. But hockey in particular, because I know we didn't have it here, right? So a lot of people don't go or haven't been, and and then they go and they're like, oh God, man. Like, I think if you ask Jay Binkley, he'd rather go to an NHL game than a football game. Yeah. Oh yeah.
Damn.
Yeah.
That's saying something.
Yeah. Binkley's big in the hockey, man.
No, he loves the Blues.
Oh, he's a big Blues guy.
Yeah.
Okay. Fair enough.
He's down the road, Mac.
Jason about the Blues.
Yep.
Close team. I had to root for him. Speaking of rooting for, I think sometimes in sports that are hurting, you need a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if there was a villain in baseball, can you name it?
Dodgers.
I mean, as a person, as an individual.
As a person.
I mean, for a short period, it was like Shohei Ohtani.
A-Rod.
And he's gone.
A-Rod, right.
Right? But, like, right now, you need a villain. Like, if Bryce Harper were to flip roles and not be the face and be a heel.
Mm.
It would make the sport better because you'd never know what he's going to say, what he's going to do, how he's going to, show off. But he's played long enough to where he's seen himself become the hero.
Like, yeah, he'd be hard to flip.
Yeah, and he's, now he's in Philly. Like, he's in a town where their fans are rough, but, like, here's Harper. And college basketball is a sport that not a lot of people are following anymore because the product has gotten stale. It's not as fun. It's not as competitive. But the SEC is great. And I think the more that you lean into that, you will enjoy college basketball. And we got the Hurley man in UConn who's just consistently playing the role of the villain.
Two rings.
I mean, that's a bald man calling another man baldy.
Was it Baldinger at the game?
And it was exactly, UConn beat Creighton, and Creighton's fans were heckling Bobby Hurley.
Yeah.
And or is it it's
Dan
Hurley. Yeah. Bobby's in Arizona State, who's also a Richard.
Right.
Who like had his team walk off the court after like some foul got called. He didn't like it. He's like, we're just gonna leave.
Powders.
So yeah, he's not the greatest guy in the world because he's done this before. Like, remember, don't turn your back on me. I'm the best effing coach in the sport.
That's right, to a ref.
Then he doubles down.
Two rings, Baldy.
Two rings, Baldy. A grown bald man.
Very bald man.
Very. I mean, looks like Scott Van Pelt's doppelganger. And Scott Van Pelt, one of the coolest guys in the world. And he goes to the crowd that's heckling him and calls him Baldy and shows him multiple times that he's a two-time winning national championship, back-to-back championship winning coach. And he's had these antics where he
imagine Andy Reid doing that.
Oh, yeah. My God.
Never.
Three rings, Baldy.
Yeah, listen, three rings. Mustachy.
Mustachy. I was thinking,
Yeah. So, I mean, but maybe this is something that college basketball will need because when you are a heel and you are genuinely known as the heel, people will watch to see you lose to see you melt down. You want to see Hurley melt down. You want to see him pout. You want to be the team that checks his ass and see what he's going to do to you. That's why we hated Nick Sirianni because he did this sort of stuff, but it brought the best out in your crowd.
It was great for your team. Like, yeah, Dan Hurley is kind of like the Nick Sirianni. Now, I think he does more from a coaching standpoint.
And he's
than
got
Nick
one
does.
Ring, Baldy.
Yeah, he's got one.
Yeah,
but there's no doubt. Like he is a douchebag. I don't think I'm speaking out of turn by saying that. Mm-hmm. But he's also great for college basketball because at this point in time, college basketball needs something. Nobody cares about the sport anymore. They just don't, except for 3 days in March when you're filling out your bracket. Everybody's having fun with the tournament,
right? The two things they have this year that are entertaining is Cooper Flagg and the SEC.
Okay.
Those are the, like, I mean,
literally. And I'll find them in March, right? Like, it's just for me, I'm like the rest of America. And I've had this debate with, years ago, a friend of mine, we were working together in St. Louis, and he grew up on the East Coast, and so did I, obviously, but then I went to KU, and he would tell me, he goes, nobody cares about college basketball. This was 17 years ago. Nobody cares about college basketball outside of March. And I was like, oh, you're nuts. No, he was absolutely right. I just wasn't there yet, because I went to a school where college basketball was big, and obviously, obviously in the early days of my career in Kansas City, our professional teams were not worth talking about. So the college thing became pretty big. But ultimately, it's just it's a blip on the radar screen. It is a very ancillary sport that not many people pay attention to. And then the NCAA tournament rolls around and we're all experts on it. So Dan Hurley is actually really good for college basketball, especially when you don't have a great product. That's why baseball could use that villain. It is the Dodgers, I think, as a team, but they don't have that one player that truly is universally hated, I don't think. Maybe Anthony Rendon could be that villain, but he doesn't even play, so you can't have him as the villain. Mike Trout's not a villain. Shohei Ohtani is not a villain. Judge is not a villain. Bobby's not a villain. All the great players, they're all likable. They're not, like, Ellie De La Cruz is not a villain.
Maybe Juan Soto can lean into it now that he's in the other side of New York.
Yeah, but he's also on a nondescript team, you know?
Yeah, like, it would have been better if he was a Yankee.
It would have been much better if he was if he stayed with
less
the Yankees.
As a Met.
Yeah, as a Met, people are like, whatever. You're with the Mets, you might as well play with Toronto. Yeah, it's not that way. Maybe Bregman can become the villain.
Jazz Chisholm was a villain here for like a week, but he's not a
hot minute, but he's not big enough.
No one cares about Jazz Chisholm.
Enough to be a villain. So I don't know who that villain is in Major League Baseball from an individual standpoint.
But I think
LaRusso was kind of that guy.
Yep. I think to your point, it was really fun for that week to have a villain.
It was. Was it not, though?
We all loved rallying together.
Give you a little extra juice.
Yeah, yes, it did. It brings that to the party, right?
It was awesome.
So it's good that Hurley is the villain. It's good that he's kind of embracing this role. LeBron in the NBA is kind of going to always be the villain, even though he's not, but he always will be. And the Eagles now in the NFL, because their fan base sucks, so they can be looked at the villain right now. And Dan Hurley embraces it. Like, he is the perfect villain figure for college basketball and for sports. He embraces it, he leans into it, and he probably goes over the top with it, and it's good for college basketball because we're talking about it.
Two rings, Baldy.
Baldy.
Call him Baldy, which is so good. I love it. Two rings, Baldy.
Come from a bald man.
I think
like a fat guy be like, two rings, fatty.
Yeah, it's like it's a fat guy calls me fatso.
That had to shock the guy in two ways. One, Hurley's talking mad crap to me. And two, that bald man just called me bald.
Baldy,
like,
what?
Like, world shocked.
Way to go, four eyes, wearing glasses.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, wearing glasses.
Look how fat that guy is, sir. You weigh 350 yourself. Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not him.
Yeah. Just brutal.
No, that's what you got to do, though. Lean into it.
Yeah.
And your fan base loves you, right? Loves you. And everybody else hates you. He's the perfect.
Textline says that the Houston Astros were the villain.
They were.
And, like, Jose Altuve. But, I mean, like, that's gone. It was like a flash in a can. but it was, it's not there anymore. I mean, they still, like, boo people. Mm-hmm. Like, Bregman will still get booed, probably not in Boston anymore.
Altuve is going to get booed
every time,
you know.
So, I mean, yeah, I guess they're there for a little bit. But
are they, but if you're at a ball game this year and Altuve comes up, are you really going to remember to boo him, or somebody else will boo him? Oh, yeah, that's right.
We're going
10 years.
I had the energy to boo him like the first year around.
Right. I did
now
too.
I'm just like, all right, how many people still do it? Like, I just sit there and I'm like, yeah, Jose Altuve, here we go.
Yeah. Boo. Like, okay.
Congratulations.
Right. Like the first year.
Oh, I leaned into it.
Of course.
I stood up, hands around the mouth. Ooh,
right.
You know?
We all did. Right. And then now it became six or 7 years later and you're like, eh.
You're like, yeah, whatever.
Yeah.
It is what it
thing.
Is. Yeah. Just stay away. You'll
it's
be
like Altuve calling somebody short, you know?
Yeah. Take that, shorty.
Yeah.
What?
Huh?
5'4".
5'4", dude.
Dude, you're like shorter than everybody.
Yeah, well, that's like your opinion, man.
Go for it, Hurley.
Yeah, keep doing it, man. Keep leaning into that bag mentality. Because then, again, like, Caitlin Clark needed a villain, and it sold.
I mean, her
and Angel Reese, it was like, I don't even know where these two came from, but I'm locked in on these two girls going at each other.
The best was Caitlin Clark, like, really not even acknowledging Angel Reese, too, and her trying to, like, pick fights all the time. And Caitlin
Clark,
she
would subtly, like, she would do the ring thing, and then Angel Reese did the ring thing, and you were more mad at her than Caitlin Clark. I don't know. You need villains.
You do.
You need heroes. So, college basketball, you have your villain. Now, can we get Cooper Flagg versus Hurley?
No, because he's a Duke guy. He'll never be a hero.
Huh? Fair point. We could talk about that later on in the day, about later on in the weeks or something, about how... Has Duke lost their villain stuff? Because really, I don't think people hate him as much as they used to.
Well, because their coach doesn't look like a rat who eats cheese.
Mm. Speaking of cheese, today
dyes his hair.
Today is National Cheddar Day, and Galentine's Day. But coming up on the other side, we play some audio for you again that we played earlier that brings a whole career into perspective here on 96.5 The Fan, your home for Kansas City sports.
You're listening to Fesco and Dusty on your new home for Chiefs football, 96.5 The Fan.